This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
If you've sprung up instinctively and started singing to that, you are definitely a true blue LaSallian. The La Salle School Rally, as I'm told by my producer Arlene, who is married to a La Salle alumnus, is one that is not only sung in schools, but at social gatherings, as she ruefully found out at her wedding. That sort of pride and passion attached to a school is something we don't hear enough about. Today, we're going to be talking about the history of mission schools and the La Salle School's influence in education over time here in Malaysia. There are over 400 primary and secondary mission schools throughout the country, founded and managed by the teaching orders of various Christian churches. This began in 1852 when the De La Salle brothers and Infant Jesus sisters first set foot on Malayan soil. And I couldn't ask for a better guest in talking to us about this. Joining us on the show this evening is...
My name is Brother Anthony Rogers. I'm a La Salle brother, originally from Penang, but I've been in Kuala Lumpur for more than 40 years. I came as a student to study in the University of Malaya, and after that, I began teaching in a number of our La Salle schools.
So before we get into the La Salle brothers and their schools, could you just give us a little rundown on history? When was the first mission school established in Malaysia, and which was the first mission school?
Yeah, it's interesting you're asking about our first school, but I think a more interesting fact is the person that founded our so-called La Salle brothers, La Salle schools, is somebody by the name of John Baptiste de La Salle. He was in France, and he was a priest, but he found during the Industrial Revolution that the parents didn't have time to go to church. They were all in the factories working, and they left the kids on the streets. So when he saw the kids on the streets, he said, this is not the place for kids to be. So that's why the whole revolutionary idea of education that was only meant for the rich and the noble and the children of the nobles, he started education in a new industrial era. And that was, 330 years ago. And very interestingly, they faced many, many persecutions. Even within France, the brothers were chased out, the communities were closed. But that persecution brought us to Asia. After 150 years in Europe, we came to Asia. And very interestingly, the first school that we began in Asia was in Penang. But before the brothers took over a school that was started by Sir Francis Light, the so-called founder of Penang, because some people say they found him one day on the beach. He didn't found Penang, they found him on the beach. So as a result of that, the Francis Light started, together with the help of the French priest, first school. It was called St. Francis Xavier's Free School in 1787, 1 year after Francis Light arrived in Penang. And very interestingly, that school, the medium of instruction was Malay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because there was a group of so-called Eurasians living in Kuala Kedah, and his common law wife, called Martina Rosales, brought the whole of the school and the church to Bishop Street and Church Street in Penang. I'm saying this very, very consciously because my first point that I'm going to make, that our LaSallian education is relevant only in a certain context. In each era of history, of civilizational development, education must be the first thing that must change in terms of its concept and hopefully in terms of his praxis. So that's how we began in Penang in 1852. Three brothers came to Penang on a boat from Singapore because six of them had come. Three dropped off in Singapore to start a school there. And together with the six brothers came also, very interestingly, five sisters. And that's why the IG sisters always, you know, put their buildings next to us, because they still feel that we educate the boys and hopefully we'll educate the girls and make them good wives and they're good husbands. I'm not joking, I'm serious. So I think this is part of, you know, the holistic education that we thought about.
Yeah.
There's no education without a home.
I would love to get into how La Salian education has evolved, but just let me fill up all the gaps first.
Please,
so
please.
The La Salle brothers, did they stay in Malaysia till the end of their, the ones who arrived, did they stay here till the end of their lives or did they go back?
No, they didn't stay till the end of their lives because after the first 50 years sitting comfortably in Penang, we said time for us to move. It took 50 years to bear the fruits, not just the tree, the fruits, the flowers were there 50 years. And this is very, very important. We developed a model and replicated that model. So right after the first 50 years, we moved to Malacca, St. Francis. We moved to St. John's. We moved to five schools before independence. And those were all direct replicas of each of our schools. And three characteristics of our schools in those days, because I talked about the Industrial Revolution, this was a colonial era. So right when the brothers took over the schools, we changed the medium of instruction from Malay into English. That was our first contribution to society because the British colonial government, which supported us a lot right from the beginning, wanted English-speaking civil servants, persons with character, persons with the right values, persons who would be motivated and to serve the community. And that was our first criteria that defined our whole school's contextualization and relevance. I'll talk later about the other two parts, which is an integral part of how we move from one school in 1852, exactly 163 years this year. We have 44 schools in Malaysia.
How many schools globally? I mean, regionally, are there 18 other schools?
Yes. We're very, very, not highly organized, very decentralized, you know, participatory system. Whereas we grow, we share resources with others. So from Malaysia, we moved to Myanmar, from St. Joseph's Training College, which was the first teacher's training college for young brothers like us when we were the students. Hong Kong, Sabah, Sarawak, Borneo. So we moved from Penang. So education is not to be kept under the tempurung.
Hmm.
Once we develop a nicely, beautifully, genetically modified, you know, education, we've gone through the seeds all over Asia. And that has been the power of La Salian education. And that is not separate from mission schools, huh? Because we were the leaders historically. And we have tried all the time to be in the front line, not just in terms of doing, I think more essentially rethinking. I think that is a key word in education. Rethinking, remolding, hopefully transforming.
I never attended a mission school, but I've heard stories about how students were fearful of the overly strict brothers and sisters who ran the place, how they had no hesitation in using the cane which they often carried with them. I ask Brother Anthony this next on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to the Evening Edition. I'm Uma Pagan Ampake Pagan. I'm speaking today to Reverend Brother Anthony Rogers, the FSC Sector Leader, La Salle Pacific Asian Region Conference, Malaysia. And we've been talking about mission schools in the country with a particular focus on La Salle schools. So, Brother Anthony, there's this preconceived notion that the brothers and sisters who ran the La Salle and the convent schools in the country were super strict. They would put the fear of God in students and use the cane liberally to keep students in check. Is this true?
When we talked of, you know, being strict, we talk of punishment. I think that for me is secondary. The primary word is discipline. You know, we help young people not just discipline through the cane and to reward them with a carrot, but help them to realize their education is about self-discipline. And that's why within the school system, we also, I think we're the first in that sense to develop a system of, I won't say monitoring, we had class monitors, we had prefects, and that one, not the policemen, they were the ones who encouraged, they stood at the door and asked us when in standard five to arrange our tie properly and to make sure our shoelaces were tight. I think that is part of what I call community. The teacher doesn't have to do anything. It's a peer-oriented, I won't say discipline, discipline for personal responsibility. And most importantly, I believe the heart and the essence of LaSallean education and hopefully mission education is not just about social mobility. We drum into them. This is not about rising up to the top, but about social responsibility. And that social responsibility can only come if we know how to discipline our lives, you know, not with a carrot, not with a cane. So mistakenly, there were brothers walking around with the canes. I don't know if the sisters walk around with the canes in the convent. But I think this is part of the, not fear, hopefully not fear. When they left, although many of them got a few things on their back, you know, but they realized that, you know, but we will never do that. I myself, when I was in school, I'm very proud, I never used the cane. Because ultimately believe that, you know, it is our own ability to reason that will prevent us from doing wrong and hopefully motivate us to do right.
Let's go back to how parents at the time bought into the idea of enrolling their children into schools. Education wasn't really at the top of their mind. They were busy making a living to survive. Schools were revolutionary then, and like you said, it wasn't the norm for the poor to go to school. So how did the brothers convince parents that children should be in schools, that they should be receiving an education?
So John Baptist himself, when he told the kids, hey, I'm bringing you to school, not just to teach you, you go back and change the life of your parents. Go and tell them what is the meaning of your faith. What does it mean to be a good family? If you see the two brothers, siblings coming to the school, they go back home and they're behaving themselves. The father and the mother will ask them, say, hey, what's wrong with us? Why are you fighting in front of the kids? And this is a very, very interesting. And that's why he calls it, you know, we call our education the human and the spiritual education. If we cut one out, you become a human being who is just able to use his reason to create a better world and smart bombs and what have you. And this is where the spiritual education has always been an integral and constitutive part of LaSallean education. So the trick is this. If you want to teach the students, teach them well, go and do that at home.
It's a cycle. Right? Yeah. I mean, it's not a vicious cycle, a virtuous cycle. Yeah.
So the school is not a daycare center.
Yeah.
We dump them with the teachers and ask them to teach. No. And now I think the government's policy today of this thing called Sarana Ibu Bapa, I think it's a fantastic idea. But the only problem is for our PIBG meetings, PTA meetings, very few parents stay up. Why? Because they have subcontracted education to the Ministry of Education, state officials, even to the teachers. And this is where I think our LaSallean schools and our mission schools are trying really, really hard. He says, hey, we're keeping your students in school 8 years. We want to increase to 10 years. It's a very, very good move. You know why? Because they're practicing and trained to exercise boredom, because that's what working life is about. So I think this is the second aspect of education. As we move along the age, enough of the mass-produced goods of the Industrial Revolution. What is the meaning of education in a globalized ICT world? Our curriculum must change. Not just the content of our teaching, but the process and the pedagogical approaches towards teaching. I'll just give you one little anecdote. I was at a meeting recently, and we were asked, like, oh, what is the ideal of a LaSallean education. Some people said, oh, must do this, must do this, must do that. Then I, like an idiot, I stood up and said, my ideal LaSalle school will be, the students will be in class for 2 hours and have recess for 6 hours. So they thought I'd gone mad. I think that is the essence of education. They learn more outside the classroom than in the classroom. They learn from one another. They can put their iPad there today. They can go home. I love to give 2 days holiday every week to the student. Go and do homeschooling. I go and, you know, have community-based learning. Weekends, go for picnics, go outing. And that's how our time in school, that's what we did. And but I don't know why I became a brother. I saw this guy so happy. Weekends, picnic, lab. I don't think we studied in class. But we enjoyed becoming students who longing to have knowledge, not just for a career, but to be happy in life, to have... Until today, there's the strength of many of our LaSalle schools. Our annual gatherings are more than beer drinking parties. It started off as that a long time ago. But they come and they can yarn and tell stories. They can still recall, because I believe young people today don't have many moments of joy to share. I think that is the essence of life. And school is supposed to be joyful, not miserable. But today, with all the stress and the competition. So that's my second point. We need to change our pedagogical approaches in the school and also at home.
And on a global level, the LaSalle brothers are known not only to educate, but support and help youth at risk, the underprivileged, drug users, orphans, and so on. Is this practiced here as well, or is LaSalle in Malaysia purely focused on education?
We started education for only one reason: for the last, the least, and the lost. That's, you know, because John Baptist de LaSalle went to the streets of Rouen and Reims in France. So when we came to Asia, the first thing we did was open the doors of our schools. Not one single cent, free. And that is the essence of LaSalle education. And that's for the poor. What form it takes, I'll share a little bit later, but how, besides our 44 so-called LaSalle schools in Malaysia, we're also moving into what we call the margins. I'll share a little bit about how, after 160 years, we've realized that, you know, academic excellence does not mean happiness.
I'm curious, how did the mission school survive over the years? Were there fees charged to students? Was it only based on donations and grants from well-wishers?
I had two levels. First level, right from the beginning, from day one, the colonial government, when we used to, you know, when we ran the school, we used to find our own little monies and all. But when the colonial government literally paid for all our teachers. That is the first and the most important thing. Secondly, as for the lands that we bought and the buildings that we put, that is the second point. Besides the government, we believe our schools are community-based schools. So the poor kids came, they didn't pay anything, but the rich parents were the ones that really supported us. You know, I can tell you about this famous Hia Ju Siang in Penang, a famous businessman. After the Japanese left, the Americans did us a favor. They bombed the whole building to the ground. So we had to put up a new building. That was in 1954. You know, and every single cent came from public donations. So people are still very, very proud of our schools, because it's not a brother's school. It is a community's school. I think this is very important. So now we notice you talk about private-public partnership. We had private-public partnership long, long time ago. And the role of the brothers was, just like the satya seller, he used to go and keep the fire going.
We're heading for the news next, but after that, I'll be speaking to Brother Anthony about how mission schools are relevant today and what is being done to support them. Don't go anywhere. This is BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good evening. I'm Umar Paganampake Pagan, and you're listening to the Evening Edition. For the past half an hour or so, we've been speaking to Brother Anthony Rogers about the history of mission schools here in Malaysia and how much they've contributed to our education system. Brother Anthony is the FSC sector leader of the LaSalle Pacific Asian Region Conference in Malaysia, and he's been sharing his thoughts with us about the LaSalle method of teaching and educating. A little bit of historical context again, Brother Anthony. After independence, mission schools and every other school in existence had to adopt a national education system that had its own syllabus. Tell us what that transition was like.
So after independence, 1957, the big event was the Aziz Commission. That literally gave an option to the teachers whether they want a national service. And that's what happened. They became so-called civil servants. They became. That means they had to teach the curriculum, not of the school, but of the national, which is excellent. Secondly, that as a system becomes more and more centralized, there must be place for greater autonomy. I think that is a fundamental, you know, globalization, I said regionalization, localization. There must be. If you don't respect, not to say don't respect, if you don't accept that there are possibilities of new initiatives coming from schools, which the trust schools very ironically are doing, you know, they're giving back autonomy. Why? Because you trust them. Maybe I won't say the mission schools were not trusted in their attempt to want to homogenize, centralize, because many people think that unity is about uniformity. Unity is not about uniformity. Unity is about diversity. Why can't we allow young people slowly give us greater autonomy? And this is the very interesting move that took place. But after 30 years now, 50 years independence, I think the government is realizing that industrial age education of standardized mass-produced education is not going to work. And that's why the fact that they are allowing, I wouldn't like to call them international schools. They are not international schools. I would call them English medium schools, offering greater freedom. And that's what we did before. Mission schools, LaSalle schools, why did we blossom and grow? Because they allowed at that time English, but at the same time, without negating the fact that we must give importance to mother tongue and national language. I think so it's not a compromise.
Is there still enough or significant government support for mission schools?
There were certain, you know, rights that were taken away. And that rights, not taken away, but maybe we gave them up because we didn't stand by what I said just now about our Board of Governors and Board of Managers. That is another form of decentralization. Where the parents come, the teachers come, and the brothers are involved. We get our alumni to be involved. Not about giving, I'm not talking about power. I'm not talking about power. I'm talking of the influence.
Yeah. And the decisions that are important for the school.
Yeah. Minor decisions. Don't have to come and tell us, you know, what to do. But hopefully, we're true Malaysians. That is the starting point. From being a true Malaysian, our inner identity, our external shows of what we are, then I think trust us. I think the word is trusted. So I like the word trust school. Can mission schools become trust schools? Only if they will trust us and entrust us with new responsibilities. So this is not a demand. This is just, I think, a nice little way forward. You can see in our documents and our writings and that we have got a dream. So very briefly, you know, what is the essence of this new transformation? We have got threefold strategy. First is what is called transformation of our schools. Not just, you know, what do you call a quantitative education, but quality education. And what does quality education basically mean? It means, you know, holistic, integral holistic. Secondly, we are saying that some of our schools, besides being, you know, these academic schools, we're also moving towards developing what we call new LaSallian educational initiatives. And that is introducing within our schools creative, vocational, technical subjects. And there are a whole range of them now under IGCSE, Cambridge, TAFE in Australia. We are going around picking and collecting all this and coming back and say, our boys in Form 4 in St. Xavier's now, they're doing culinary arts. The guys who are sleeping in class, we take them out and they're bakers at the end of Form 5 with the SPM. Group of them doing motor mechanics, group of them doing electronics. I think, but we don't want to take them out from our school to send them to technical schools. In fact, when I was talking to a ministry official, I said, brother, you can send them to tech. I said, no, we want to keep them in our house. Keep them for a full 13 years so that, you know, we will nurture them with, you know, with the culture, with the environment, with the ecology that is wholesome. The third is, which for many of us comes back to the first question you asked, that that within this system, we are not looking for the high jumpers. We're looking for the guys that are crawling. So in all our schools, we have started what is called LaSalle Learning Centers. You know, they come in the evening. I won't go into details, but this classroom doesn't have a teacher. It has got 12 desks. And inside each desk, they clip the desk, has got 12 levels of learning. A guy who doesn't recognize alphabets the first day, he looks at the alphabets. Second desk, he looks at the numbers. The third one, he picks up the telephone and answers the telephone, 12 different types. A part of that, they sit and play games. And that is the type of new approach towards learning. Not teaching, but learning. I think these are the three, and we're slowly moving into our schools now too, no? And some of the sister schools have also taken this challenge up. I think they'll be surprised, you know, the kids, such kids, their problem is not teaching or learning. I think for so long they've been told, you're stupid, you're stupid, you're stupid. And they realize all of this, no, I'm not stupid. There are many things I can do. You put them on the football field, and you put them on a piano, give them a guitar, let them sing. Isn't that education? So that is those are the threefold. Transform our schools, the ecology. Secondly, open up new structures of education, vocational color. And the third is go to the weakest. Because sometimes you'll find in society so-called stupid, who can jump high jump, they're best swimmers, best musicians. You know, I think this is what we are trying to do, and this is our long-term plans. Hopefully, we will one day get back our right to train teachers.
I was going to ask you about that. By strengthening, so mission schools, I suppose, across the board, with the
473 mission schools in Malaysia.
Yeah, with the Lasalle schools, with the Tamil schools, with the Chinese mission schools, they always have a certain amount of rights, I guess, with determining who their headmasters are, even training some teachers. I mean, does the Lasalle Foundation still have those rights today? Are you hoping to get it back by strengthening your board of governors?
Our first strategy, the transformation of schools, is get back our boards of governors and managers, because it is a participatory structure. Parents are there, alumni are there, brothers are there, and also the community is there. Not just the alumni who've gone through our schools, you know. And people living around in Sentul, people around Brickfields who have sent their children, they will come back to our schools and give them back their rights. So we are doing that. And the government so far has not told us we can't do, because that is there very clearly in the agreements with the government. There was a very, very big sensitive issue some time ago, which is gradually being resolved, but with a number of very, very big obstacles. There is this principle of what we call maximum consultation. We own the land, we own the building, so we say, hey, please give us a right to at least nominate names for heads of our schools. We had, the path has been difficult, but there is one thing we must stick by. And very interestingly, at least I will say this for myself, in any LaSalle school, we will choose the best teachers, the best head, Takera, whether Muslim, Buddhist, Hindu. Although some people may disagree with me, because I believe we're all Malaysians, we all believe in God, we believe in eternal truths, and they are the people, the best will be from everywhere. I think that is the second principle. So we will nominate names. We've got so many Hindu heads of our schools, Buddhist. That's not an issue. And the third very big issue, which I brought up recently in one of the educational forums that we had, and that is the land is ours, the buildings, most of them are put up with the community's money. The government is sending taxpayers' children to our schools. They are sending civil servants to sit in our house. They're not paying a single cent rent, but they're asking us to pay for water and electricity. Do you think that's fair? And these are some of the not rights. I wouldn't call that rights, No, these are some of the basic common sense courtesy that we give our part. You do your part. There are a number of our schools now in serious debt because we haven't paid our water electricity bills. I think it's not fair. So the type of things we're talking. We're not shouting, we're not going to the newspapers and making a big issue. We want to continue talking. The intake of students. In some of our schools, the number of classrooms are small, but they're putting 50 students in some of the classrooms. That's not called education. So we are regularly all the time. And these are some of the very, very vital issues. 3 or 4 of our school buildings infested with white ant. We go up to the state education department. Sorry, no, we don't have anything under the budget called white ants. Pest control. Roofs are leaking. So there has to be. Maybe we have kept quiet for too long. Another very serious problem is in some of our schools, because of the demographic changes, students are going off elsewhere. 20, 30, 40, 50 students in a school. That means the per capita grants get less. How do you pay for water? How do you pay electricity? How do you improve the facilities? But one thing I can assure you, I think bright times ahead. We're very hopeful people, because if we don't have hope, sorry, there's nothing we can share with the young. When things get difficult, things get hard, there's a time people like us need to rethink paradigms, and hopefully change our own values and attitudes, and also learn to bring our partners together. Because the second word, in our Lasallian ethos is called association. Association simply means not a club. Association means we hold hands together. We journey together with the young. If we adults can't hold our hands, sorry lah. We can't journey with the young. And thirdly, that all this so-called faith, what we believe in the last, the needs and the laws, through association one another, we adults, is for service. Service to the kids, and we have our ulterior motive for being of service to them, because we hope they will become citizens who will be of service to everybody, especially for the weak, the downtrodden. So hopefully our education, is supposed to, bring this closest gap between the rich and the poor. Close the gap between our moral and our ethical, between our rhetoric and our reality. And ultimately, if you ask me what is Dasarnya education, I will say it is about forming minds, hopefully changing hearts and transforming lives. Without that, education and the civilization will go wrong direction, because I'm sure many of our mission schools, we are journeying together. We may have different stages, and we are not the new kids on the block. We know the oldest around. Our numbers are going, numbers of brothers are decreasing, but the number of students increasing all over the world. In Asia alone, we have close to 150,000 students in our schools. So I think that for me is a sign of hope for the next generation.
That was Brother Anthony Rogers, the FSC sector leader of the LASAL Pacific Asian Region Conference of Malaysia. Many thanks to him for giving us a history lesson in how mission schools came about, and also for being so candid and honest about the trials mission schools have faced and are currently facing today. Of course, folks, if you missed any part of this program, you can download the podcast from our brand new app available at Apple's App Store and on Google Play. You've been listening to The Evening Edition. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.